Hey, ladies and gentlemen, I am coming to you this evening from a very colourful office in a very colourful set of offices in Solihull in the West Midlands. It's lovely and colourful because there's no reason why building your business, why marketing should be depressing or dingy or drab. In fact, quite the opposite. And there's no reason why our CPD should be boring or drab either. I'm here because this is the headquarters of the Entrepreneurs Circle. Now, you will have seen some of the emails about this. You'll know already the name of my guest. Some of you may even have had emails from him in the past. My guest is a man called Nigel Bottrell. He is famous throughout the world, not for his business building, but famous for the colours of his shirts, the extraordinary presence which he projects whenever he's on stage. Nigel, it's wonderful to be here with you.
Good to be here.
I've known Nigel now for several years. I've introduced him in our material as the Big Daddy of Small Business Advice.
Really?
Nigel, is that fair?
Big Daddy?
Are you the Big
Daddy?
Well, you're certainly tall, aren't you?
Shirley Crabtree was the Big Daddy. There can only be one Big Daddy.
But, Nigel started his life with Barclays, or started his working life with Barclays, and he left Barclays when he was on a six-figure salary, a sort of thing that only osteopaths can only dream about. Was that a good decision, Nigel? Have you made any money since then?
Yeah, it's... We're into our 13th year, so I've been going to be too unlucky this year. But since that decision to leave the employed world and kind of set up on my own, but it was a decision that I had been kind of fighting for quite a while because I wanted my own train set. I wanted to do my own thing, and looking back, although I spent kind of 18, 19 years employed by other people, the day I set out on my own and took control and responsibility for my future and my family and indeed the business was the best day.
Bit of a leap of faith though, wasn't it? Because you went out, you were living off your wife, let's face it. She'd invented a business which...
When I started out, it all happened. We've got a little bit of time, but it happened quite unexpectedly in the beginning because I thought I had this plan and I thought I would. I had a 6-month run up to it, and long story, I left Barclays and I was actually running a business as the employed managing director. And I went down for my monthly meeting with the chairman and shareholder of this business, and I thought I was being very gracious to have been with him for a couple of years. We'd done a lot of good stuff. And I thought it's fair for me to give Hamish 6 months' notice of my intention to leave and set up on my own. And so that's how the conversation started. And half an hour later, I was without a job because Hamish rightly said, look, if you're going to go, I can't have my managing director in situ for 6 months because you will become impotent. And he was right, and so I had to leave straight away. So I kind of had this entrepreneurial thing kind of thrust upon me a little bit more suddenly than I was perhaps expecting. And I'll never forget I was at Euston Station having had this meeting, and I was browsing the bookstore for my train was due, and I saw a book on the bookshelf, and it was by... Robert Kiyosaki, and many of you heard Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And I saw this book and I felt it was kind of calling to me because I thought, erroneously as it turned out, that morning on my big salary and my highly paid job, I'd been a rich dad. And now I'd got no job and I was having to go and work on my own. I was a poor dad. In actual fact, the opposite actually in truth was true. That was quite a kind of fateful day. But I remortgaged our house. Hurriedly, whilst I was still technically in employment, so I had a salary that I could fit on, and you could do that a bit more easily back in 2002. Yeah. So I remortgaged the house, took a chunk of cash out that would allow me to hopefully build this business and not our lifestyle wouldn't suffer too much, and the rest to some extent is history.
But now your business now is about advising small businesses on how to market their businesses, how to grow their businesses. Is that what we were doing at Barclays? Is that what you've learned since then in the 13 years?
I was never a banker, just to be clear. Please don't hold me against me. But I did all sorts of things. I was quite renegade, really, for Barclays. But I did have a couple of other jobs after I left Barclays. I worked for John Cordwell, phones for You Business, and then latterly for Hamish Ogston. So what I'd done was marketing, so I knew a lot about marketing. So when I set up on my own, I didn't really have a plan as to what I was going to do, but I knew I could market stuff. So I initially started out as a consultant. I set out to help to work with some other businesses in and around the Solihull area where I was living at the time to help them develop and grow. And that was how the business kind of kicked off. And I was a marketing consultant. And we did okay, I'll be honest, for quite quickly I managed to earn enough from my clients to replace my salaried income. We were doing some good stuff. But my wife is, as you've alluded to, really, is is responsible, as is often the case, I find, for things that happen. Because she'd been a full-time mum for the previous 8 years that I'd been working, looking after our children. And but she was a bit nervous. Obviously, it was a big leap stepping out. There was no entrepreneurs in my family. No one that we were friends with ran their own business. It was kind of seemed slightly strange and weird. And lots of people near and dear to my parents still worry now. My mother still worries. I'm going to get her. When are you going to get a proper job, Nigel? But Sue was keen to do some stuff, and she came up with an idea to run her own local community magazine. And what that entailed, you know, she was very ill-equipped for. But she set out to provide this magazine. It would be delivered free through doors. It would carry advertising on local businesses. And I just humoured her. I thought I was going to do a course, dear. But she got on and did it and went out there, got herself some customers straight away, and published this magazine, and quite quickly was generating a half-decent income. And after a year or so doing this, I built my consultancy business. We had someone suggest that we should put a pack together to help other people set up and run their own local community magazines. And this really was when my whole business took a big twist, because we were not prepared for what happened when we launched this pack. Because I thought we might sell a handful of these packs, and it might fund a nice family holiday. That was my initial expectation of what my mag might do. Well, in actual fact, what happened very, very quickly over the course of just 5 or 6 months, it grew from nothing to be pulling in initially 20 or 30,000 pounds a month. It was more than replacing my consultancy income. Yeah. And then in the December of 2004, an article appeared in a women's glossy magazine, Red Magazine, the widest red women's glossy at the time. And that magazine generated over £250,000 of sales in a matter of 4 or 5 weeks. And that changed everything for me, because that gave us the capital to invest in other stuff and build other businesses.
Was that an accident? Because you talk a lot about the pillars of marketing, one of which might often be PR.
Yeah.
But did you actively seek out Red Magazine?
Well, no, we didn't. So at one level, we did definitely get lucky. But you kind of make your own luck. And I'll never forget the call. It came through, and we were actually we were down in Devon for a week. We'd gone off for a long weekend. And I had the office phone diverted to my mobile, like you do. And I took this call, and this lady explained she was a freelance journalist. She'd been commissioned by the editor of Red Magazine to do an article on women who were working part-time from home, which is exactly what Sue was doing. And she'd come across our website for MyMag. Now, this is the bit where I know we work, because at least she found our website because, A, we got a website up, which was actually fairly radical in 2004. It wasn't as commonplace as it is now. But even more radical, we were marketing it really well using Google AdWords, which had just started in that country. We were one of the very first customers of Google AdWords back in the beginning, late 03 and early 04. So we'd done the right things to help her to find it. But her then finding the site, joining the dots, ringing us up, there was a bit of good fortune there. And that PR story definitely made a huge difference to
us. So she was doing all her own marketing at this stage, and you were consulting?
Well, I was taking care of the marketing. I will take credit for the AdWords campaign and indeed the writing of the website. But what we were promoting was very much Sue's doing.
Now, I've promised that you're going to tell everybody at least 5 things that are going to help them grow their osteopathy businesses this evening, or their own practical physical therapy businesses. But one thing sticks in my mind, which resonates with me as an ex-military person, and I know you think is very important from everything that you preach, and that is that when you stepped away from your consultancy, you've made a promise to Sue.
Yeah.
And the promise was?
Well, I really wanted my own business, but I had a successful corporate career, and I got good at kind of climbing the greasy pole in large organisations. And as a result of that, I was very highly paid. I mean, I was on a six-figure salary. I had bonus on top of that. So we had a nice house with nice cars, we had nice holidays. We didn't have any debt, but neither did we have any savings. We spent all the money we earned, as a lot of people do. So if I'm going to go on my own and run my own business, I'm walking away from all this income. And whilst I wanted my own business, I didn't want to give up. all the nice things that, because you just get used to it, you know. And so the deal I had with Sue, we sat down and we mapped it out. And the deal I had with Sue, which was, looking back, I was kind of blissfully ignorant, really. But I thought, well, if I'm earning all this money as an employed person, I better earn it as a self-employed person. So yeah. I've got to earn £100,000. That's not turnover. That had to go from our business account into my personal account in the first year.
So that's pretty focused.
That was the deal. Yeah. And the deal was, and if I managed to do that, then I could carry on being kind of self-employed, do my own thing. Yeah. But if I came up short against that goal, then I would have to go out and get another job whilst I was still employable.
And that's, to some extent, that, I'm sure you can develop on this, that's the parallel with the military, because in the military operations, the fundamental principle of war is the selection and maintenance of the aim. It's focusing on what you're trying to achieve, not necessarily how you do it, but what you want to achieve at the end of the day. And I suspect that a lot of people, I know, and you know for sure, a lot of people running small businesses don't have that focus.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're getting some money in, and what they get in dictates how much they can spend.
Oh, completely. We see this all the time. Yeah. No one has ever been more driven or more focused on their business goal than I was in those early months of 2003, because 2002-3, because that was all that mattered. There was no way I wanted to go back. The admission of failure that would have been entailed, the impact it would have had on the people that I loved most, it would have been awful. So I was very, very focused on bringing that money. And what I found subsequently, when you do have a goal that really matters, because you see, lots of people would like to do something, they'd like to drive a nicer car, they'd like to go nice, they'd like to have a bigger house, but they're not prepared to do the things that are necessary to actually get them or achieve it, whatever it may be. And just, I will say at this point, just to be clear, because when we're talking about this, I do recognise that there are a lot of things in life that are more important than the money.
That was going to come up. Is that the focus? Is that what all of our viewers should be focusing on? How much money they want to earn? Or can you put it in different ways?
Well, you can put it in different ways. And I recognise fully that success means different things for different people. Mm. At that point in my life, I had a lifestyle that, you know, I was in my mid-30s at that point. You know, I had young children. I had a very, very nice life. Mm. I got to the point where I hated working for somebody else. And a very deep-rooted within me was this need to do my own thing. Mm. And I really wanted to do that, but not at any price. I wanted to do it and build a better life for my family. That was my driver, and that was what success meant to me. And in order for me to do that, my business had to generate six-figure income. Otherwise, it would have been a step backwards on the income chart. So that was how I chose to kind of personify and encapsulate what my goal was. But I'm the last person to say that's what, you know, it is not, there are other things in life. But in business, money is the currency by which success is measured. And the great thing about money is when you do earn lots of money and you've got a successful business, it does give you freedom to do lots of other things. You know, you can do a lot of good in all sorts of ways if you can write checks and make things happen.
Yeah, indeed. And I think, you know, my background now is osteopathy, and I know that a lot of osteopaths are much less money driven than, let's say, bankers.
Yeah, and so do I, and that's why I'm saying this, because I recognise that fully.
But there are things that I suspect a lot of them want to achieve in their lives. Now, I suspect also that your goal has changed since 2002-3, and you probably revise it quite regularly.
Yeah.
And so what keeps you driving each
year? We sit down every year. October half term, we go on holiday, and Sue and I will spend some time over a couple of dinners and maybe a little walk on a beach somewhere, and we will map out what we want to do in our lives next year. Mm-hmm. So this is October half term, so we did it October just gone, and we're mapping out 2015, and this is what we want to achieve, and that could include also, it might be holidays and travel, we want to go, do we need to change the cars, is there some work on the house, what might happen, are we going to, it's anything. Sue's got a big birthday this year, so there's quite a big party she's planning, so we just look at it, so what we want to do in our lives next year. There's a couple of charities that we're doing some things with, and so we write all this down, and then you put some numbers alongside it, and it tops up to some numbers, and it's bigger now than 100. 100 grand, I'll be honest, it is a bigger number now. But well, that's the amount of money that I need my business to generate next year.
I'd be disappointed if it were less.
Yeah, well, so we map it out of what we want to get to. And I do think this is a really, really important point, because a lot of entrepreneurs that we work with, and this will definitely apply to osteopaths. So, for instance, there'll be a lot of people watching this who, where they go on holiday next year, will be determined not by a proactive plan of I'm going to take the kids to Disney. So that's quite a popular in the circle. We've got a lot of parents.
Have you been there?
He's teasing me now. We go to Disney every year because this is our favourite place. And even though my two eldest sons now are 19 and 20, and they still come every year and they love it, and they bring their girlfriends, we have a great time at Disney. So Disney's our big thing. But for lots of families, going to Disney in Florida, it's a really big thing.
Well, you take your staff there as well, don't you?
Yeah, we do. Yeah. We have taken some staff there as well. But the point is to decide now what you want to do. And certainly, over the last dozen or so years, I have booked holidays in the October or November, having had our chat with Sue, we're going to go to places, so I've booked the holidays, and at the time I booked the holidays, we haven't had the money to pay for the holiday. But I use that as a driver for me, because that works for me, because once I book the holiday, there ain't no way I'm cancelling the holiday. I'm not letting the... And I tell the children, I'll tell everyone as we're going on holiday, there ain't no way I'm cancelling the holiday. I've just got to work out enough ways to bring in enough revenue and enough money in the business. When the holiday bill comes due, I can pay the holiday bill and we go on holiday. And that is different to how most people in business work, because they will wait and see what money is left over next year is what they spend it. And if you take that much more passive approach, then your life will just be less interesting and less fulfilled, and you'll do less stuff. Whereas if you actually make conscious decisions to make things happen, because as entrepreneurs, and ultimately, if you're an osteopath running your own practice, then that is what you are. You are an entrepreneur. And the brilliant thing about entrepreneurs is we can do what we want to do, because the responsibility for it is ours. Yeah. It's up to us.
And my experience of the osteopathy world, and to a certain extent the other physical therapies, is people just let things happen to them. You set up in practice and you kind of assume that because you're out there to do good, people will come to you and they'll know that you're good and they'll know what you do and they'll want to come and use your services. And I've spoken to several people. Actually, today I spoke to several people who are particularly interested in this session because they're about to start their own practice, and they're clearly, they're thinking about how on earth do we get people to come through our door. But that's what you've just said is great. So I'm going to book my 5 holidays the next year, and they're going to, I'm going to fly club class to Disney. I'll go to Disney, but it's not going to happen just because I've done that, is it?
No.
So how do you make the change?
Right.
How do you make a change in your business that makes that happen?
Well, let me tell you a little story. And when I started out on my own, looking back now, my biggest strength at that time was an acute awareness of my. Almost my biggest weakness, but I was singularly ill-equipped to succeed as an entrepreneur, because everything I'd done in I left school at 16, O-levels in those days, we had, and I'd gone through kind of this corporate career with Barclay and other companies, and everything I'd learned and experienced was all about succeeding in a large corporate environment. And now I was now bereft. I had no HR team, I had no secretary and PA, it was just me in the back bedroom at home. And looking back, and I will never ever forget that first day in business, and I can remember it like it was yesterday, because I was up in the bedroom at home and Sue had taken the children off to school and the house was deadly quiet, and I just remember thinking, oh fuck, what have I done?
You're allowed to say that this time.
I just did, because it was because it was the weight and the enormity of what I'd taken on that Monday morning just sat on my shoulders like a massive lead weight. And looking back now, and I can remember it very, very clearly, and I reckon, well, okay, Nigel, take a breath, but you are not the first person to do this. Other people have been here before. And what you need to do is find out from them how you succeed at this. Yeah. And that was, I think, a really, really important thing. And looking back, and this is, the internet was in its, very early stages at that point, but I started to look for people that could help me. And there was a guy in our village, a chap called Martin Howie. And Martin was an old fella, lived around the corner, he'd retired, and somehow he found out what I was doing, and he took an interest. And Martin used to pop round to my house every couple of weeks in the afternoon, and we'd have a little chat. And there was one particular, I'd been going about 3 months, and I was doing okay. I'd got some clients, I'd got something, a revenue coming in. I was living still off my remortgage money, but we were all right. And Martin was in one day, having this cup of tea, and he said to me, Nige, he said, what's the most important thing you've got to do for this business of yours to be a success? And that's one of those horrible questions, and I kind of flipped and flopped around a little bit. But I finally, I figure I've got to get and keep enough customers, Martin, because if I get and keep enough customers, then one way or the other, everything else will take care of itself. And that's definitely true if you're setting up an osteopathy practice or any other kind of, you know, you need enough patients coming in to treat. Because if you've got enough patients coming in, one way or the other, everything else will sort itself out. So he said, Nigel, I agree, I thought, phew. He said, so when are you getting and keeping customers today then? I said, sorry? He said, well, you've just told me that the single most important thing for the success of your business, which, by the way, Nige, I know is the single most important thing in your life right now, is getting and keeping customers. So any sane, sensible person that understands and acknowledges that would surely have some time set aside every day to do that single most important thing. Well, I didn't. I felt a right twit. He said, well, what have you done today? I said, well, I got up early and had my 1 minute commute up the stairs to the bedroom. I said, and I checked my email and took the voicemail message off. Had the post had come. At that point, I had one member of staff actually. I had got someone working for me, doing a bit of admin and some telephoning, and then I'd done some work for a client, and then some checks had come in the post. So I'd gone to the bank to pay the check in. I'd been really busy. I'd had a very busy day, but I'd done nothing to move my business forward. I'd done nothing that day that was going to bring me in more customers. And that conversation with Martin, one of the most seminal moments in my life, really, because the very next day, I started a habit, and it's a habit that continues, as you know, right until today. And I attribute this habit to, in truth, a huge amount of the success that we've been very fortunate enough to have. Because every morning, I'm a morning person. I'm at my best in the morning. How on earth you got me to agree to this at this time of night? I've no idea, because I will be comatose by 7:30. But in the morning, I'm on it, and I'm full of beans, and my brain works at its best, and I'm at my most productive. So I come into the office now, and here, and I'm usually the first person here, and I go. And I shut my office door, and there's a sign on my office door, and you've seen it, and it says, do not disturb unless building is on fire. And no one can come into my office when that sign's on the door, and that sign's on the door for 90 minutes every morning, from about 7:30 until 9:00. And my phone is turned off. My wife knows she can't ring me that time. My office phone won't ring anyway. The last thing I've done before I leave the office at 9:00, my email is turned off, and I come in and I spend 90 minutes every morning, and I still do this now, on the things that are going to make my business more successful. And if I was setting up any kind of practice, then I would recognise that what you've got to be for at least a few hours every week is you've got to not be a clinical practitioner, and you have to become a marketer of whatever it is that you do.
Now, I think Nigel has just hammered that point home quite well, but it is worth dwelling on that. There's a couple of things that have come out so far. You know, first is having some focus on the business, but the second is this business of actually thinking about how you make something of your business. Now, I've spoken to lots of osteopaths. I think of one I spoke to today who's actually too busy to think about how she can do things more effectively and efficiently. And, you know, you can get sucked into that. Email's terribly important. Answering the phone is terribly important. Walking the cat is terribly important. Whatever it is you do with cats. But this business of thinking about what you want to do with the business is kind of what we're here to learn today. One of the things that strikes me, though, is that you'll have seen this from the osteopaths you've dealt with. A lot of them don't like marketing, because marketing is thought of as being hard sell. It's thought of as being snake oil. It's thought of as being, you know, lies dressed up as you know, a means of just wheedling people in through the door. And we don't like to do that, because we're here.
Neither do I.
Yeah, you know, we're providing healthcare.
I'm deeply offended.
People will come to, if we build it, people will come.
And as you know, because I've written an article, I blame Kevin Costner for a lot of things, and that's one of them. Because just because you've opened a practice does not mean that people will come. And it does not mean that you'll be, you know, killed in the rush and the bookings will flow. And the reality is, we might like, and I did a lot of work with restaurant owners, so I'll talk about them for a moment or two, but I know this applies in your field and with the people, you know, watching this tonight, but restaurant owners in particular. Right in their core, they believe that the success of their restaurant should all be about the quality of their food, the excellence of their service and the wonderful ambiance and atmosphere they can create for their guests. And those should be the three things that determine the success or otherwise of a restaurant. Because that's why they've gone into that business, because they, what they excel at is hospitality or the food, and that's what they want to do. And those things are clearly important, but they are not the determining factors. And you know, if you look at on the fast food side, McDonald's never ever claimed to make the best burger. It's not about the food, but the marketing is sublime. And the same is true in for osteopaths or you know or physios. Yeah. At the end of the day, just being there, doesn't matter how great your treatment is, doesn't matter how much better you are than the guy down the road, unless or until you market yourself effectively, you will your business, which is what it is, will never reach its potential. And the 90 minutes a day, and that might seem like quite a lot to begin with, and if that is, then pull it back, do an hour a day. But 90 minutes works for me. I can keep my constant, I can get in the zone for 90 minutes. And 90 minutes a day, that gets me 7.5 hours a week. That gets me 30 hours a month, you know, on working days. Now, 30 hours a month of properly focused time, you can make a lot of stuff happen.
What do you do?
And well, I have a list and a plan. So AdWords is a big thing for us, as indeed it works. You ought to have made it in your market, because there will be some people in your neighbourhood or in your area who this evening are considering for the first time going to see someone, and some of them will go online. Not everybody, I recognise that. Some will go to the GP, some will ask a guy at work, some will ask some friends. Some people, though, will go online and they'll search for an osteopath or a physiotherapist. And if you're not on AdWords, they won't find you.
So are you writing the copy for those AdWords? There's not much copy in an AdWord, I know.
Well, although the copy is very important.
Yeah.
If I'm looking at my AdWords account, I'm always looking to improve our AdWords accounts. Yeah. There's a lot, I mean, Google are, it's got a lot more sophisticated since the early days when we started. But Google have, I call it the Google stupidity tax, because Google are very good at taking money off people that don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
It's very, very easy to burn hundreds of pounds on AdWords. And, AdWords doesn't work. Well, it's pretty, it's no different to if you landed from Mars and I went and sat you in my motor car. You know, it would take you a while to work out how it works, and eventually you turned it on and you crash into a wall. That's what the cars don't work. Well, they do work when you know what you're doing, how to drive them. And AdWords is the same. And for most businesses, and certainly businesses in your sector, there's a market to have AdWords. So AdWords will be on my list in the morning. I pay a lot of attention to my online marketing. I will be doing leaflets and flyers and door drops. I'd have a newsletter that will be going out regularly. I'll be looking at my follow-up campaigns. I'll be making sure that I am keeping in touch in the right way with all my patients and things are coming back properly. Facebook advertising is really, for us, it's one of the most lucrative marketing pillars that we've got right now, because there's also, well, the great thing about Facebook is you can find people. You know, the targeting that you've got is just tremendous. So that would get on the list. I'm looking at offers and creating offers, because offers are difficult. And I mean, most people, I say most, a lot of businesses default to the bland, boring 10% off kind of offer, and which is a real shame, but because good offers that work can have a dramatic impact on a business. But that takes time to think about that. And unless you create the thinking time, you end up doing things in a rush, in a panic, and you come with something that's bland and boring, and it doesn't impact. Oh, my flyers didn't work. No, your flyers didn't work because your offer was shit, and there was no deadline, and the design wasn't right, and the copy that you'd use wasn't good, and where was the headline on it? And those are the things that are taking my time. And this focus on the marketing, and it's easy to say, but it's even more important if marketing is not what you're good at. Because you'll default to doing the things that you are enjoy and are best at, and they're not the things that will make your business the success that it has the potential to be.
I remember you said not long ago, but you'd employed some telesales staff, and one of the rules you said was never give a telesales person any other job to do.
No,
because if you do, that's what
they'll
do.
Because
no one wants to ring potential customers, because it's a horrible thing to do.
I'm not a fan of. I will go to considerable lengths to avoid ringing someone up who doesn't know me.
So to turn it around, if you can get them to call you, then that.
And
that changes the whole approach, doesn't it?
That's exactly what I mean. That's exactly right.
Predictable question has just come in here. from all our questions are anonymous,
okay.
So nobody gets blamed or shamed.
I love the high-tech delivery of the question, that's great.
it works. I've spent £500 on AdWords with no results. What am I doing wrong? I suspect that's quite a hard one to answer without seeing the AdWords.
We'd have to have a look at the AdWords account, have a look at it. Yeah. I mean, first of all, you don't need to spend £500 to learn that you're doing it wrong.
Because you can set the budget.
Yes, you can. £250 budget ought to be enough to start to get some lead flow. It depends. One of the biggest mistakes people make is Google's default settings are to kind of broad match. So Google will show your ad. So if, if I target one of the keywords was back pain, then Google would show my ad to any keyword search anywhere in the world that's got pain in it or back. And now again, the default actually would normally be UK, but you need to go and make sure that you're not on very targeted match, so you're only showing your ads for the very specific keyword that you're searching for, is the first thing, because that will save you a lot of money. Mm. I would be interested in how big that person's negative keyword list is, because there'll be things that showed that we have a huge, our negative keyword list is massive, and they're keywords that we don't show our ads for, etc., and pull that down. Mm. Then I'd look then at what the ad said and what was the headline in the ad, and I'd be testing two or three ads against each other, and then I'd be sending them to different landing pages that I'm asking for different information, because how was this person tracking? So AdWords, I'm not pretending for a minute, it's not as sophisticated as fixing someone's back, but that's not a completely ridiculous parallel. My point is there's a lot to this, and in the same way that I would be utterly useless if you needed me to, in any way, correct your spine, anyone coming into AdWords without taking some time to learn how to do it, it isn't difficult, it is just like learning to drive. Anyone can do it, but you do have to invest some time being taught properly first, and if you just jump in a car and spend, it's the same what happened here.
Yeah. And I suspect we've got some people out there who don't even know what AdWords are, and it's a bit of a minefield when you start, but as Nigel says, you can target things. I think, can you do radius searches with AdWords? You can, can't you?
Yeah, it's very, very sophisticated now in terms of what you can do.
And of course, there's a negative keyword, so you can stop it picking up on things that you don't want to see.
All sorts of things.
But how often would you check an AdWords account in the early stages to find out?
Every day.
Okay.
Every day.
Is that your 90 minutes?
Sometimes, twice a day. Yeah. And that in the beginning, that was a very important part of my 90 minutes.
And what were you looking for?
Oh, well, I'm looking for things that are working well. So if I find a particular keyword that is working well, then I want to put more money onto that keyword, and I'll take that money away from it, because I want to spend. When you get AdWords working properly, it's like having your own personal cash machine. And for every time I spend £100 on AdWords, I get £2,000 back. I mean, that's a 20-to-1 return. Now, if every time you give me a pound, I give you £20, you ain't stopping giving me pound coins. No. If every pound coin gets £20 return, now that's, in fairness, now it's more like to get a £10 return on a pound coin, but knowing you like I do, Stephen, you'd still kick me them pounds, wouldn't you? You'd still want that £10 back. Yeah. And so I'm looking to work it through. I had in the quite early days, I had a guy who used to look after our IT and our website stuff, and one day he was in our office, and my Google statements were on the desk, and he saw at that point, I think we were spending something like £10,000 a month on AdWords. Now, I was really happy because I was getting a couple of £100,000 of sales on the back of that. But his instinctive response when he saw this, he said, says you're spending too much AdWords. He says, you don't need to spend that much. And this was, for me, a really important moment, because his starting point was completely different to mine. Because I see my AdWords is just an investment. And if I can start to get a return, I want to put more and more money in it.
Isn't this a fundamental of what you teach people who are part of your organisation or members of your organisation? It doesn't matter what... There is no marketing budget, I've heard you say before.
Well, not if you're sensible, there isn't, because it's back down to my £1, £20 thing. Yeah. My marketing budget is £10, okay? So you give me £10 and I give you £200 back. Are you going to stop now? That'd be insane.
Yeah.
You'd keep giving me pounds, and then it goes down to 19 and £18 back, because it will deplete at some point. Mm. But when are you going to stop?
So our question about this £500 spend on AdWords, I think if we can, if not Nigel, but if you can send in more detail to me, then I'll be able to try to give you some help on that, some advice on that. But I've got another question here, which I think you might struggle with, actually, Nigel. Bear in mind I'm talking now to Nigel, and he's the head of the Entrepreneur's Circle. Can Nigel recommend a good resource for learning how to drive online marketing? that is current and up to date. I mean, I don't know where you'd come across
that knowledge. Well, we should. We should do something for all your people in terms of, because that's what the Entrepreneur Circle is. I mean, we haven't done the full story, but the Entrepreneur Circle came out by accident. Yeah. Can I tell that story?
Yeah, please, yeah.
Because it goes back to 2009, the beginning of 2009, which, if you remember, that was the kind of recession had just kind of started. Lehman's had gone under, we had the rush on Northern Rock and everything, and the media was at its darkest and most gloomiest around this time, 6 years ago, 2009. And we have a franchise business called The Best Of. I thought I'd better do something to support my franchisees. It's going to be a tough year, this. So we put on some events. We call them recession training. We ran them in this very room, recession training events. And a whole bunch of them came along, and they were very well received. It was how to succeed when the economy's in a bit of a disappointing state. And that night, on the way out, the second event, I said to one of my guys, I said, look, on the way out, tonight, get people to just talk into camera, film on video, and put a little video together. Because although a lot of franchisees have been, a lot hadn't. I said, we'll send the video out to those that hadn't been, and we'll do one more event in a couple of weeks' time. So they sent this video, and then what happened on the Friday night? They sent it out, but rather than sending it out to my franchisees, like 120 people, they sent it out to all my franchisees' customers. So it went out to like 15,000 people. And I was at home on the Saturday afternoon, and I got a call from my managing director. I said, no, I don't know what's happening. He said, we've had 12,000 views on this video on YouTube. I'm like, what's going on? And it turns out what they'd done, and there's a lesson here, they sent this email out to all these people, realised what they'd done wrong, and then sent a follow-up email. And he said, oh, sorry, that last email wasn't for you, it was a video for our franchisees. Please don't watch it. So, of course, everyone watched the video. And we came out on the Monday morning to this massive pile of emails from people. Yeah. A handful were irate, how dare you, this is a disgrace. And most of them hoped they'd get into trouble. But in there were quite a lot saying, it sounds quite interesting, this training. Mm. How can I get some? So I thought, well, what could we do? And everyone's missed an opportunity. So we put on some of these training courses for our franchisees' customers. And we ran three of them, one at Blackburn Rovers Football Club, we ran one in the Midlands, and we ran one down near Brands Hatch. And about a couple of hundred business came to each one. And what we realised all of a sudden, that was the first time we'd done anything with other business owners outside our own business. And suddenly it was like a light went on, because I realised that actually all this, look, I do a lot of learning. I travel all over the world, as you know, to learn stuff. And, you know, marketing is my thing, and I get good at this. And so we try and stay at the cutting edge. And I hadn't realised until that point in 2009 that actually most people don't do this. And as you know, in business, for 70 years after the war, if you wanted to succeed in business, all you had to do, you took the biggest ad you could afford in Yellow Pages, you relied a lot on word of mouth, and if you were a bit flash or really ambitious, you went to the local paper. And that was kind of all you had to do until really about 10 years ago. But in the last 10 years, everything has changed. Yellow Pages is dead really now. I mean, there's a small segment of the market, but you can't build a business on Yellow Pages anymore. So word of mouth, I talk much more about social media, about Facebook in particular and Twitter, etc. Yeah. Local papers are going out of business as well. The readership is confined typically to a much older demographic. And so there's a lot more stuff now that a business owner has to get their heads around. And we realized, actually, well, we've got all this knowledge. So we started to share it. And the Entrepreneur Circle is the structure that we put around it, and we share everything. We have a training arm, so we run over 400 different training courses. We, as you know, there's a whole lot of resources and things out there. So if people
it's come on a bit, hasn't it?
Well, no, just a bit, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, when I joined your Entrepreneur Circle, which was, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, something like that, mm-hmm. There was a lot going on, and I learned a hell of a lot. And I left after a year, 12 months, 18 months, something like that, because I thought, okay, well, I've seen all the stuff you're bringing to people. And then someone else came to me later and said, have you heard about this Entrepreneur Circle? You really want to join the Entrepreneur Circle? And I thought, yeah, I've been there and done that. And he said, oh, and he told me all this stuff that was going on. Well, that's a bit different. And I remember I came to, I think it was a national meeting in Bolton. Right. I think I probably came. I was a Latin.
We go to the grandest places, don't we?
Oh, it's lovely, Bolton. Yeah, and it was 15 quid, and I went in there, and I'm like, wow, it has changed. And even since then, it's come on again, and you've got a new headquarters, 100 odd staff.
We've just got over 100 staff now. Yeah. But the reality of it is, you see, that there are a lot of people who are responsible for their future. Yeah. They want to grow their business. Yeah. They are ambitious and driven. They don't want to be millionaires, but they want to exploit their potential. And to do that, you have to, there's ways of thinking that make things a lot easier.
So I think the answer to the question actually is, you know, is there a good resource available for people who want to learn all this stuff? Clearly there is a good resource in Nigel's organisation, and this is not a marketing interview for Nigel, but you know, if I'm here talking to the expert in marketing advice, you can't expect him not to mention what his organisation does. There are other resources out there. As far as AdWords is concerned, there's a very good how to do Google AdWords book, isn't there? Which might be slightly out of date now.
Well, no, my good friend Perry Marshall, who is an American, but please don't hold that against him. Perry writes the definitive book on Google AdWords. If you chuck it onto Amazon, you'll find it there. And that will be a good starting point.
And we actually produced, the APM produced a guide on how to do Facebooks cheaply and easily when we first set up the organisation. So we'll release that again to people who have joined since then, so that we can actually help you out with Facebook a little bit. And we'll put some thought to other resources, and we'll put that in the text summary of what we're discussing this evening. But let's move on to how we grow our businesses. We little osteopaths who have come, some people have come straight from college, some people have come from other careers. They're all sitting there in their practices. They need to get people through the door. They need to not waste the few precious quids that they've got at the moment.
Yes, I understand that, yeah.
Getting people in. Where would you start?
Well, are we talking about a brand new startup? Or are we talking about a practice that's been around?
Well, it could be either. Which would you like?
Well, because my starting point is different, you see.
Right.
Because What a lot of people don't understand is that the most valuable asset in any business is your database of past customers, or in some businesses, people that have at least have inquired historically. So if I've got an existing business and I've got a database of past people, my starting point would be to establish or re-establish a communication with them. And I would do that. I'd look at a number of ways to do that, because people that we have a buyer is a buyer is a buyer, and at the end of the day, there'll be some correlation here, because people that have been to an osteopath, we're much more likely than the average to go again.
I think they might hear you talk about your database of your past customers. I know that I have assumed in the past that once I have a customer, as long as we've treated them well, they will come back, so I don't need to keep in touch with them.
Well, I think that's foolish.
I think you're right.
And I also think, you know... And
I've changed my mind, I hate to
go. Because everybody's busy. And it's almost arrogance, is that approach, actually, in truth. Just to assume that because they've been once and you've looked after them, that they will just come back. Now, what I'm not suggesting you do is the stuff you talked about earlier. This is not about pestering them or hammering them with any kind of hard sell, but I do want to remind them that we're here. I might want to entice them occasionally. I mean, our database is very sophisticated. We there's all sorts you can do once you know how long is it since someone has come back, what we might have to do to re-engage them and get to come back again. But to ignore people and just assume that because you're there and they've been once, they'll come again.
Do you know what was a blinding...
How very dare you?
So it was a blinding glimpse of the obvious to me, actually, recently, when Claire, my wife, who's another osteopath, she said that she'd said to a patient, well, it might be a good idea if you came back every 4 months to keep yourself healthy. And the person seemed to regard this as permission, because they didn't realise that was okay to book regular appointments. They thought they had to wait until they were in pain.
That's a really, really good point that you make there.
Yeah.
A really good point, and especially because you guys are... your customers, there will be a natural respect for your authority from many of your customers. I'm sure there'll be one or two that will that you wish they had some respect, but actually but a lot of your customers, because of your medical knowledge and because of what you're doing for them, because you are alleviating pain, you're making their life, you know, more pleasant, the impact is often immediate, and they will, to a large extent, often they will do what you say. When Sue started this magazine business that I mentioned earlier, she was wonderfully ignorant of how it worked when you're selling advertising, because she'd never done it before. So she the very first person that she spoke to, she told us, you know, already enthused about this magazine, and I said, yeah, I'll give that a go. She said, well, do you want to go for 1 month or three? I'll go for 3 months. That'll be £79 then, please. And she kind of stood there and kind of waited for the cheque. And she got the cheque. Now, the established norm when you're selling advertising is that you take the order, you run the ad, print the magazine, send an invoice, and 2 months later they pay the invoice. Well, she didn't know that. That certainly didn't compute with her business that she wanted, because I've got to pay for the printing and everything, I've got to get all this done. So she asked for the money up front, and what happened was, in most cases, she got it. Now, effective marketing is exactly that same piece. Because if you've got an existing database of customers and you suggest to them that they might want to come again, then they do. The dentists do this really well. Dentists are very good at this. It's become almost like the norm is that you go to the dentist twice a year. Yeah. Now,
how did that become the norm?
Well, do you know what? I'd love to know. It's actually quite interesting. But it has become the norm.
Yes.
And it probably has something to do with the NHS, I suspect, if we go back in time. But either way, that is what happens now, and people go to the dentist. And if you are in a practice and you've got existing customers, you know that you don't have to just alleviate pain, you can stop that pain coming. And I would suggest you are derelict in your duty if you don't let your patients know that.
Yeah.
So you let me go away and the pain come up again, when if you told me to come back in 6 weeks' time, you would have stopped me suffering.
Yeah.
Now all I'm talking about is effective marketing, and all you're talking about is effective osteopathy.
And ethical marketing.
And the two things are the same, that's the point.
Because I mean, you've told me in the past, there's three ways to increase your earnings.
Yeah.
Is you can sell more stuff.
Yeah.
You can get more customers.
Yeah, or they come more often.
Or you can get your customers back more often.
Yeah.
Now, we are resistant to saying to our customers, come more often, because it sounds to us unethical that we're trying.
But don't say it that way.
No.
Don't say it broadly speak that like that. Yeah. Talk about the individual. One of our big mantras in entrepreneur circle, it is all about relationships now. Business, no matter what you might think, it's all about relationships and your ability to build strong relationships with each and every one of your customers will be the single biggest defining factor. So you do that relationship by when they are with you, they are the most important person. And you will respect them, and you'll engage, you'll be there in the moment, and get them back when they need to come back.
Yeah. And, we've got some particularly successful osteopaths in my practice, and, they're not shy. They say to patients, you need to come back, and their books are full.
Yes.
And the patients are happy, the patients don't complain. If they don't want to come back after 3 months, then they won't. They'll say, I think I can go to six, or I'll wait until I'm in pain. But actually, they appreciate being told that they can come back.
I've got something. I don't want to lose the profit piece,
right,
because I know it's not about money, but I do want to share with the viewers tonight a really smart way to deliver a 20% profit growth in the practice.
Right.
From immediately,
yeah.
And we've seen this done with a number of people, and I'm going to tell a little story again. It's because I do like to go to Disney, but when we go across to Florida, we'll usually go to Universal Studios. Now the kids are a bit older, and it's great fun there. And I discovered a few years ago that Universal Studios do a VIP tour, but they also do something called Universal Express. And when you arrive at the theme park, you go in, and it's in round numbers, it's like $100 for a day ticket. A bit cheaper if you're for Baltimore, $100 round numbers. But when you get inside the parks, you've already paid your $100. If you arrive in the first hour in the morning, they've got these little stands pop up, and they're selling Universal Express. And you can buy this, and it's usually, for most of the year, it's like another $60 or $70 on top of the original ticket per person. But you get to enter all the rides through a separate entrance, so you don't queue. Now, at this point, two things happen. Some people see that and think, I'm not paying another $70, so they go off and they have a nice day and they queue. But some people see that and think, bloody brilliant. I'm absolutely there, I'll pay my $70 because I don't have to queue, so I can do more rides and have more fun. And what happens is, again, round numbers, they can only sell 1,000 Universal Express tickets every day. Because otherwise the queue would just move, if you think about it. But it's 1,000 a day. Now, let's just do some maths here, because that's... So, $60 a ticket, Stephen. Your maths there, okay? 1,000 a day, that's...
That's a lot of money.
$60,000 a day. And they're operating 7 days a week, Stephen, so that's...
Seven times that.
That's right, $420,000 a week, Stephen, that's correct. And
Nigel used to work in the bank.
But they're open 52 weeks a year. So in round numbers...
No, I'm not going to do that one.
In round numbers, $22 million. Right. They say, what on earth has this got to do with osteopaths? It's got a lot to do with osteopaths. Because that $22 million, first of all, it goes straight to the bottom line because there's no additional cost. A little bit of rope and of some size initially, but fundamentally it's lost in the roundings. There's no additional cost in the running of the park for that extra $22 million. It comes straight in the top and it goes straight down to the bottom line. And what's really interesting about this is that the Universal Studios was open for 11 years before they even tried this. It's now a very important part of the revenue stream. Mm. But it was never part of the business plan. It was never part of the whole case for the theme park in the first place. Some bright marketer and then worked out one day that some of their customers would pay more money to avoid the queues. And there's no snake oil, there's no hard sell, but they're making available an enhanced experience for those customers that want to pay for it. And this is where it comes back to your practices. Because if I was running an osteopath practice, I would have three price bands of appointments. And I would set, if I'm already established, I would keep my price as it is now for people that came between 9 and 12 and between 2 and 5. So if price is the most important thing for your patients, they can continue to come, but they're coming in the kind of quieter times of the day. Now, if you want to come at lunchtime, the price is going to be a bit higher, maybe as much as 15, possibly 20% higher at lunchtime because they're the busy appointments. And if you want to come before 9 or after 5, then you have to pay a bit more still because those are even more. Now, the people that want, if I was going to an osteopath, touch wood, I don't need that service, but if I did, the most important thing, once I'd found the right osteopath who I was comfortable with, the most important thing for me would be the convenience to go and see that person at a time that suited me. And the price would not bother me. Because if I want to be able to go at 7 o'clock at night, and I'll pay at that price because that's where I want to go. And if I had an osteopath who was charging me the same price at 7 o'clock in the evening as he was my next door neighbour at 10 o'clock in the morning, he's bonkers. Because that's effective pricing. That actually, now that's no more work, and we know a number of osteopaths that have done this and implemented this, and what happens is they don't lose any patients. It's not a price increase across the board, because if price is your most important thing, you can come between those hours there. But if you want to come at our peak slots, the price is a bit higher. And people will understand that and they will self-select, but the end result is you do the same work and you'll make more money. Mm.
And it's not entirely unreasonable, is it?
You know,
if you want to put an osteopath to work late,
completely,
or work at the weekend,
completely,
or work during their lunch hour, then it's just not unreasonable to pay them bit more for the privilege.
No.
Yeah. I have to say that this is a very nice comment from somebody who's watching. He says, this is really helpful. Osteopathy is about promoting and maintaining good health, but we often only treat crises because we're scared to tell patients they should be healthy, they'd be healthier if they came back.
Yes.
And you're giving us permission
completely
to do what we should be doing anyway.
Yes.
Which is, so we're getting permission to give our patients permission to come back at a time frame that suits them.
That, there's two things. One is your database, and the second is putting an effective process in with you or your reception people around to make sure that it's very clear what you should be doing, and those are getting booked in. It's a simple thing.
You mentioned database a couple of times.
Yes.
Now again, that's going to be a scary word to a lot of osteopaths because a lot of them aren't technically terribly savvy. How on earth do you get a database?
Well,
I don't mean the technicality.
At the end of the day, it could just be a card, couldn't it? A box full of cards.
I've got all my existing patients there. That's fine. I know about them.
Yes.
I want to make it bigger.
Okay. So that's when we go out and start to grow the database.
Yeah.
And we start to get people that are might have a need for the services. Now, there's lots of ways you can do that. AdWords is one of them. Because all I try and do on AdWords, by the way, is we never sell our services. We just want to get people to raise their hand in some way and say, I'm interested. So we offer a lot of stuff for free on AdWords. There's free downloads. I've got one of my books that we will give away for free because to get the book, they've then got to give me the information, so they're now on my database because I know who you are, where you live, because I've sent you a book and I know a bit about you. So, and I'll trade the book for the data. A lot of knowledge that your osteopaths have got that they could do, and you could give away offers. It's one of the ways. You trade information for access to an offer, for instance. Going and having a physical presence. Events are a very important thing for a lot of businesses. Osteopaths could do a lot more to get out there where the people are. And I bet because of what you do, I think you would find a lot of organisations probably very receptive to allowing you. It's because it's like a public service almost. Mm. Even some of the supermarkets, although they tend to get booked up ahead of the time. But you would get a lot of interest if you took an osteopath's couch, you know, and stuck it in the entrance to a supermarket with some, you know, banners behind it, whatever else, and you were doing some kind of analysis or treatment or whatever, because you'd get people that would interest, because they're coming to do their shopping, but actually, oh, what's this then? And you get into a conversation, and then you get some details, and then you invite them into the clinic, and then you got a new patient, and they come back more often, and that's how you got the business, not just by helping people. So you've got to get the message out there. And do it in the right way.
You can do that properly, haven't you? It's no good turning up underprepared at your supermarket. You know, it's got to look good.
Yes.
It's got to look professional. So you've got to think about this in advance and plan, not just plan what you're going to do, whether you're actually going to do some demonstration treatments or just hand out leaflets, but how are you going to get people's attention and how are you going to get their details?
Absolutely.
Sorry, I'm making a presumption here.
But that is correct. Although I do think having an osteopath's couch would actually get attention with some the right stuff behind it. You'd need some supporting staff pulling some, you know, some friends or children, you know. Definitely what we do, we find that when we're doing events like that, you know, you want attractive but not threateningly attractive people, both men and women, nicely dressed, but, you know, people that we want to engage, nice smiles, cheery people, just having conversations, that's of interest, oh, come on in, and doing stuff. But you will get interest, it gets you, people know about you, and things will happen. One of the best marketing pillars for a lot of local businesses is are flyers that go through doors.
Cheap to produce and cheap
to... Well, they're very, very cost effective, because for the 500 quid that they spent AdWords, that would have got 8,000 or 9,000 flyers delivered, for instance.
But we both know, you know, the flyer goes through the door, it lands face down so they can't read it, and then it goes straight in the bin anyway.
Well, and of course, that will happen in some cases, but we're playing a numbers game. Yeah. And I mean, if you do a flyer, the first thing you know, if you do it properly, is you do print on both sides, because it costs no more money. It's the same money to print on both sides. And you have to lead with it. You have to have a strong offer. And you need to, that's what I mentioned offers earlier on, because we have a lot of thought to offers that work, and that work really well. And they're difficult to come up with.
So the typical thing for an osteopath might be, well, we'll give you a free consultation.
Yeah, okay. It's not the most imaginative, but it might be
10% off your appointment.
Okay.
No, we don't like that one. chocolate. Wait, what would you get?
What could be that, couldn't it? I mean,
that's not very healthy. We can't give them chocolate.
Well, it would be interesting to see what happened, wouldn't it?
It would be
very interesting to see what happened. I mean, one of the best offers I've seen recently was at a Chinese restaurant. I just want to get the other thing, because they were offering free Coke and wontons with every order over £30. Now, and this is on takeaways. When I actually spoke to the lady in the restaurant, it's just at the road here, very smart lady, because her average order value on takeaways was £27. And first of all, just her knowing that was actually quite impressive, because most wouldn't. And what she wanted to do was try and push it up, because if she could push it up by 10% to £30, that would make a big difference to her bottom line. So what she did, and I love the simplicity, she went to the cash and carry to see what was on offer that she could give away to people that spent £30. And the answer was these 1 litre bottles. They were very strange sized bottles of Coke and Diet Coke. So she bought a big pallet of them. They make the wontons themselves, and she put this offer on. And it was on all over the building. When you rang up to place your order, the first thing they told you, oh, free Coke and wontons, now over £30. And what happened was, over the first 2 months that they ran this, two things happened. First of all, the average order value went up from £27 to almost £33. That's like a 20% plus rise. Because what happened is people ordered an extra dish to get over the £30.
And it's not going to be exactly £30.
But what also happened was the number of orders also increased, because people came to that Chinese restaurant because they had an offer on and no one, the other guys didn't. And so when you compound, that's about a 15% uplift in order volume. So when you compound 15% extra orders with 20% extra order value, what you actually end up with is a 40% increase in profit for the sake of some 1 litre bottle of Coke and wontons. And it's a useful, I know you, I'm not suggesting you give a free bottle of Coke and some wontons with your back rub, but it's that thought process that can work, you know, that needs to be going, and it isn't straightforward. And we'd want to, you know, if I was doing an offer, I'd want to drill into exactly what we're looking to do here and who we're trying to attract. And but I would be looking out of the box a little bit. I'd be seeking to be different, and I'd recognise that I've got to get people's attention because that's the most. Because the big marketing sin is being boring. And being bland and being beige and doing the same as everything else. And definitely the word that it's my big word of the month, blasé. You should resist everything. Blasé is, you know, where people they've just seen it all before, so they are immune to it, they pay no attention to it. And a lot of medical people that do any kind of marketing at all, it is blasé marketing because it just looks the same as everybody else's, and it shouldn't.
Any ideas how they can differentiate themselves?
Yeah. When we set out here, I mean, you mentioned at the beginning, but at the end of the day, we are very colourful. Yeah. Now, this isn't wallpaper, we just painted the walls. And what happened was, we went to put some stripes on the wall, so I just got some masking tape, and we put it down the walls, and initially we thought we'd have to colour it in. Only when we pulled the tape, it looks quite nice, the white bits, but we just painted the walls. We do have, if you were to pan around, you'd see we're in our training suite here, and all the chairs are bright colours. It's no more expensive to buy coloured chairs as it is to buy beige chairs. They just look a lot better. We do give some thought to what we wear. You know, I like to wear colourful shirts because it's just interesting. It's a memory hook, and you've got to find something to make yourself interesting. The people that I mentioned, it's all about relationships, and people need to give a bit of themselves. If you're a member of the Entrepreneur Circle, you get to know a lot about me. You do get to know about my family. You know, I go on holiday. You know, my cars that I drive. You know, the things that I enjoy, the football team I support. You know, because I give a lot of myself, and I'm not doing that. That's not an ego thing for me at all. It's actually, and in the beginning, it was quite hard, but I do it because I've got to form a relationship with you. You know, so in my newsletters that you get, you know, you will see pictures of me because I need you to know who I am, because I need to be a person and a face. You know, that's why we'll do videos and we'll do podcasts and we'll do recordings and we'll send you letters and we'll write to you as a friend would write to you. You know, we'll choose the right language. There's no corporate bollocks in what we do. We don't go all kind of professional. We write like normal people because that's how you build relationships.
So the first thing we're going to say about our flyers is you're going to have a person on it saying something about, not necessarily about themselves, but there'll be a face on it.
Yes.
Give it some personality. Most of the flyers I see about this would, concerning osteopathy particularly, and there are people who are not osteopaths watching, I realise that, they will be, osteopathy is a wonderful treatment, it's holistic, and we do this and we do that. And we can. Needs to be a bit more specific, doesn't
it? Yeah, they do, yeah. Because you're, the person whose doormat that's landing on doesn't care. Yeah. So you've got to come in from their perspective, not your perspective, coming in from their perspective. Get into your ideal patient's shoes. Yeah. Now you might have, we've got lots of different people. Well, fine, get into each of their shoes then. So do something that is targeted at the middle-aged executive who plays golf and is suffering and whatever, you know, and write in the language. Yeah, I mean, if I... okay, so let me try and put this into my, because I don't know enough about your markets here. But if I sent something through the letterbox of someone that's watching this tonight, and it said, attention business owner, okay, the chances are it will meet the fate that you described earlier. It will go in the bin. Okay? Now, if what arrives through the door says, attention osteopath, now, the chances of them reading it now have just gone up markedly, because all of a sudden it appears relevant. I'm an osteopath. I better have a look at that. Yeah. Now, if it said, attention, osteopath in Solihull, it's like, fucking hell, it's written for me. I won't swear again now. That's the last swear, I'm sorry.
We can't go on to 9 o'clock.
But you understand my point, though. You've got to make your piece relevant to the audience. Not for you, it's not about you at all, it's about them. So talk in their terms. I mean, one of the best headlines ever written was, in terms of response, and I love this, because it's like eight letters. It's two words with a couple of full stops. That's it's nine letters. Corns, gone. Mm-hmm. Now, to me and you, I hope, anyway, so yeah. that's going to go in the bin. I'm not interested. But if I had corns, and like my grandmother has, she is attracted to that, because that's straight away, yeah, it's speaking to them. So yeah, get into the shoes of your ideal patient. Who are they? You know, yeah, what are they, and talk to them. And don't try and make the mistake that everyone makes when they try and be all things to all people.
Yeah. And those flyers, the ones that are all things to all people,
end up being nothing, yeah, to everybody.
They'll all get thrown away. So yeah, there'll be people out there saying, if I write a flyer for corns, then there's a whole load of people who don't have corns. They're, yes, going to throw these things away. But actually, a lot of them will get answers.
Yeah, because don't be frightened to repel some people, because, yeah, as you push some people away, you pull others a lot closer. Yeah. I'm very aware, and I kind of cultivate a little bit, because we're a little bit Marmite in entrepreneur circle, because at the end of the day, you've seen a little bit today what you get with us. Now, I recognise that our style is not for everybody, yeah, and I understand that, but if I try to compromise and not offend everybody, or, you know, I don't set out to be offensive, but some people don't like my style or my manner, or so maybe, I hope they're not offended, I've sworn, I'm sorry, I didn't intend to swear, but I'm passionate about this stuff, and sometimes that kind of comes out. But that makes us a bit different, but what it does is it pulls some, because some people, this is great, I love, this is exactly what I want, and it, yeah, pulls them closer. And so one of the things, if I was setting up my osteopathy practice, how am I going to stand out, yeah, amongst all the other practices within 50 miles?
And we all come out of these schools which make us, these give us a self-imposed idea of how we should behave.
Yeah.
And actually,
but we're pushing against it.
We can be different. Yeah, yes. We can be different. Back to databases.
Okay.
So I've done leaflets, but there are people out there who have computers these days.
Yes.
And there are people who want to send off piles of emails.
Yes.
And they'll be sceptical about this, because they'll say, well, emails, you know, my inbox is 300 strong and they all go, yep, to the bottom of that, people delete, mm-hmm, them. But you can't send emails if you don't have electronic records.
That's
true. How do you get those? What is going to make someone give you, who isn't already a patient, give you their details?
Well, okay. Well, the first thing, you ask for it. And actually, just to be clear here, because you want the email addresses of those people that are already patients, because that will, there is now some semblance of relationship, and you absolutely do want their email address, because there were things that you can communicate and make it interesting. I mean, you write some very good stuff, very interesting stories that are not, they're not directly, I mean, you don't write about things in a kind of directly medical sense, you tell stories, and the stories are really interesting, people like that, human interest stuff. We've got a photographer having tremendous success with their Monday Munchkin at the moment. And it's basically every Monday they publish a photo they have taken of a cute kid. And because actually lots of people love this because they're lovely photos, so it brightens up lots of people's days. Because what happens is now lots of parents want their kid to be the Monday Munchkin, and when it goes out, it gets on. So it's a really smart way. An email goes out there, it enriches the lives of the people that open it, and it grows the business of the person that is sending it. I would absolutely have a patient of the month if I ran a practice like yours. I would make a hero, and I'd tell the story of it, because you'll all have interesting patients. Either it'll be interesting because of how they acquired their injury, or there'll be something about it, or them as a person. Because it doesn't have to be about their treatment. It's just you have a patient, but you get to decide. Yeah. But you and now that's a nice piece. You know, I'd have them on the walls in my waiting area in my practice, because I want to make this. I want to build relationships. I would be encouraging my existing patients in a sensible way to introduce me to other people. We've got some great techniques to do that. Our tombola is crushing it with dentists at the moment, which is working really, really well. Because we have this big tombola with some great prizes, including some quite expensive stuff. But the way you get a free draw in the tombola for every time you give us a referral. And the referral would typically involve an email address and a name and a phone number of someone who now we can then communicate with them and find out about them, and there's all sorts of different ways you can do that. The physical events that we talked about there, you know, it's a good way to collect data. But the bigger you, it's not quite the big, it's not all about size, but the more people in your target market that you are able to contact, the more powerful you become as a marketer.
What about the ethics of that? I mean, if let's say you're using MailChimp, which is a contact relationship manager, which can send out emails en masse to everybody in your database.
Yeah.
Is that, you've just got somebody through a tombola, is it ethical to send them out marketing stuff?
Well, the thing, okay, if I'm going to send something out, I'm going to work really hard to make it useful and relevant to them. Okay, I don't send out stuff that is either not useful and ideally relevant. Now, the relevancy depends on what I know about them. But back down to, but now, if you send stuff that's useful and relevant, people will receive it. And when you do use tools like MailChimp or other kind of systems, you get to two things happen. First of all, people can unsubscribe on every email that goes out. There's a link there. And I, just to be clear, if someone doesn't want to receive my emails, I don't keep sending them. I'll take you off my list. If you don't ask me to go off the list, though, you will stay on my list until you buy or until you die, because I will keep sending you stuff. But
I did stupidly once ask you how frequently and for how long should you send people emails on your list, and
you
said, I think Mark Creaser, your lieutenant, chief lieutenant, looked at you and said, how long do we send emails for? And you said exactly what you did there, either till they buy or till they die or till they ask not to be on the list anymore.
Because we try really hard to make them useful and relevant. And because the other thing is, because you've got to get people, everyone has busy lives. Yes. I mean, we put a lot of, by the way, the emails, you have to pay a lot of attention to the subject line. The subject line is really important in terms of depending whether the email gets opened or not. And again, you have to get out of your own shoes and into the lives of the people that you want to read this and give them a subject line that's going to be sufficiently intriguing to make them to want to open it. And you've then got to be able to fulfill on the promise of the subject line.
Something like our newsletter, perhaps.
But because that is, if you send that out as an email, then, very few people are going to open it because they're not interested in your newsletter.
It still happens, doesn't it?
Oh, of course
people
do. No. But this is, but they're the people that have got mediocre businesses and mediocre lives because they're not spending that little bit of time to do the things that make the big difference.
There's a lot of people opened my email that said, meet Big Daddy.
Well, there you go. we've got a whole suite of subject lines that we learn all the time.
But like you said, I blame Kevin Costner. So you say you're most successful.
He's one of our best ones, and I blame Kevin Costner. We got something like a 72% open rate on that first email, and it wasn't we weren't selling anything at that point. It was about this whole perception that people think, because they open up in business, because I want to run a practice doing this, and I've got some property, that are premises, so I'll open up this track, they will come. Because Field of Dreams, all that, if you build it, they will come. And it's just not true. Yeah. You have to market it properly.
I took on board one of your lessons, one of them, some time back. And we started a campaign from our clinic where we did an AdWords campaign for people who had back pain. Mm-hmm. And effectively, we offered to send them a booklet about back pain. It was the three primary causes of back pain and what you can do yourself to fix the back pain. So we're not selling anything at all.
Yeah.
But in order to get my book, you have to give me your email address, because obviously I can't send it to you unless you give me your email address. And lots of people have downloaded that book, and they've been very grateful for it, and lots of them have subsequently booked into the clinic. Mm. I don't just send them that. I mean, I think a couple of days after I send it, I send them automatically another email that says, did you get it? And it's surprising how often the link doesn't work, and so I send it again. And then after that, there's another one. We send them another bit of information.
And if you sent a physical copy of the book, you'd get even more information, and you'd probably find you get an even better response.
Yeah. And what does that cost?
And this plays to another thing, which we must talk about tonight, is knowing your numbers. Yes. And understanding, at least it comes down to marketing, understanding what you can afford to spend to get a customer. I'll talk about, I know that you may call them patients, but customers, the same thing. So what is your average patient worth to you? And now, and again, that will, as well, it depends. Well, of course it depends, but there is an average. If you look at all the people that came into your practice last year and you look at all the money that they spent, then you'll know what on average customer spends. And some will spend more and some will spend less, but there will be an average number. Now, if you can start to understand that, and then you look at what your company, so what would you pay to get that customer? And the way to think about that is, if I had I have a customer for you just here, Stephen, he's right behind this sofa. I can wheel him out straight into your clinic now. What would you pay me for that customer? Yeah. And this is where a lot of people's thinking is often flawed, because what a lot of people default to in business is they try and get customers as cheaply as possible. And what I have found to be the case is that actually, first of all, the more expensive it is for me to get a customer, typically, the better that customer is. Mm. And because we all have good customers and bad customers, and if I have to spend more money, often they can work. But knowing that number and that value of that customer isn't just about their first spend.
Yes.
It is about that average, and you may not. And again, looking over a year is probably not sufficient, because actually, in many cases, patients will, on average, stay 2 years or 3 years. We know in entrepreneur circle, you know, on average, people stay with us between 2 and 3 years. So it's not just that first monthly subscription. So I can take a view. So I can say, well, you know, it might cost £100 a month to an entrepreneur circle. I'm prepared to spend £300 to get a customer. I say, well, how can that be? Because they're only going to spend 100 when they first come. I say, yeah, I know, but I will go underwater for 3 months because I know that on average they're going to stay 2 years. And now what that does, that allows me to do a lot more with my marketing than the kind of simpleton marketers who don't understand this stuff and who are trying to do the stuff for free or spend as little as they can. And when you're in a market where you can spend more than anybody else, you dominate that market. And for the really enlightened osteopaths out there who kind of get that, the opportunities suddenly become massively higher. Now, I recognise there's a cash requirement here, but there's an answer to that as well, by the way. Because one of the other things that people don't know about is turnover of capital. And this is something that can be very useful when you start a business. Because when people start off in business, they're very quick to, they'll cost out what they need to fit out the premises and put the sign on the door and all the physical kind of stuff. But they'll leave out and forget what it costs to get a customer.
I was one of those people.
Well, and there's lots of them in there. And the smart way to look at this is to allocate a chunk of cash for marketing. Now, ideally, the bigger that number is, the better, clearly, but we're sensibly about it. So, but let's just say that it was £2,000, say. So I've got £2,000, and that is not my marketing budget for the year, because I can show you how to turn that £2,000, just that pile of £2,000, and I can turn that into a £24,000 marketing budget. Because what I'm going to do is, that's a £2,000 pot that I've got here, and so I spend that money on sensible things, whether it's flyers or AdWords or stuff or events, whatever it is, things that are going to work. I'm going to test some stuff, and what I do is, when the money comes back in, the first thing it does is replenish that £2,000 pot, and as soon as that pot's replenished, I spend it again. So I turn over that chunk of capital, and I can turn it over. I can turn it over in 2 or 3 weeks, and I can turn it over 10, 12, 15 times a year.
But this only makes sense if you're spending that £2,000 on the bits of your marketing that worked.
Yes, it does.
Out of the first lot.
Yes.
How can you tell?
Well, you do some tests. So you do some tests.
50% of marketing doesn't work. We don't know which 50% it is. You know, that's a very old saying, isn't it?
Well,
how can you possibly monitor what's successful in a business like that?
So you use. We bring you kicking and screaming into the 21st century. and the first thing you would do, and this would be as important, you know, when you set up your clinic, you get a phone line. Well, don't stop there. Get yourself some call tracking numbers. So call tracking numbers are dead cheap. They'll cost you £1 a month per number. And the smart thing is buy 10 numbers, so it costs you £10 a month. Now, these numbers sit on top of your existing phone line, so you keep your existing phone number, but these are additional numbers. If you buy them all at once, they'll all be consecutive as well, so they'll all just the last number would be different. And then what you do is you allocate each number to a particular marketing pillar. So if you are putting leaflets or flyers out, well, then one of those numbers you only ever use on leaflets and flyers. And if you've got a website, then one of the numbers is on your website. If you do some advertising in a magazine, then you put that number only in that magazine or that newspaper. Mm-hmm. So what that means is when people, because you can go into your call tracking online, and you can the numbers all ring on your same phone that you've got now. There's no difference there, and to worry about it at all. But you can go in 24/7. You can see what number it was that people were calling, and that starts to tell you a lot about which piece of your marketing were working well. excuse me. The other way is offers, because if you utilise offers, people redeem the offers, and that tells you about how the offers are working. with interesting online, for instance, if you do something that's driving people online, don't drive them to your main website. Drive them to a page within that website, or indeed a what we would call a vanity URL. So, we just create a different URL, we direct the traffic to that URL, it then goes back to my main website, but I know they clicked on that URL, and that was only on that piece of marketing, so I know that marketing was what was working.
So you could do that very simply with just a hidden page on your website, couldn't you? You create a back-paying page, which you can't get to from the main website, you can only get there from that piece of marketing. They're going to go there, they'll see all the normal stuff on the website or not, depending on whether it's a squeeze page.
And that's great if you're sending emails, because it's the link and the link just takes you there. So lots of ways you can track it, and tracking is really important.
Thank you.
Well, that was like a long one, that one.
It was, wasn't it?
Blimey, someone's written a letter.
Right, I'll go into this straight away. Somebody asked this, it's about AdWords again and Facebook. It's how do you stop your competitors from clicking on your adverts just to run your budget up a bit more?
Okay, Google is very sophisticated, and if someone repeatedly is clicking on your ad, they will detect that and they will not bill you for it.
That's very generous of them.
Well, it's very smart of them, because and the more time you take to understand Google, Google are very focused on their customers. And their customers are the people that pay them money, not just the people that use their search engine. So a lot of things in Google are geared to make life easier and better for the people that are spending money on AdWords. And so they will look after you in that regard. And it does say, it's interesting insight actually into the person that asked that question, because I recognise that that may be a potential issue. But a much bigger potential issue is how you build your practice if you don't do AdWords, because you're worried that someone might click on your ads. And it will not be an issue. One of the things that Google track, by the way, is the amount of time people spend on the page when you click through, for instance, and that they've got very, very sophisticated tools.
Which you can monitor yourself, can't you?
But when you and I were growing up, if you, the big brains in the world, all the boffins, went to work at NASA, and that's no longer the case. They go to work at Google. They've got the smartest people in the planet, and they deal with this stuff. Don't worry about it.
The business of Google Analytics is probably slightly too complicated for us to talk about now, but maybe we can bring that up later as part of the Academy's offers. I'm going to spring something on you now, because I've had a related question, Nigel. Now, what's going to happen? You're going to lose the picture of me and Nigel, and my team are going to bring up some slides of a mock website. Okay. Now, it's a mock website because I've changed the colours, I've changed the images, I've changed the text, and I've changed the names, but it is based on a genuine and live osteopath's website, and I don't think the osteopath concerned is a member.
That's the difference between me and you, because I'd have shown it as it was.
I don't want to offend anybody. And so what we're going to do is I'm going to give Nigel these three pages from this website. We're going to start with the page that you would go to first of all.
I haven't seen these.
Casterbridge Osteopathy, I've called it.
Right.
And I'm pretending it's my website.
Oh,
this is the page
dear.
That people would land on.
Oh my goodness me. Really?
Yep. So
is this really based on a real website?
It is genuinely based on a real website. In some ways, it's slightly cheerier than the one that I based it on. We've got the title of the practice, we've got the osteopath,
which is a rubbish headline, okay? So, because they don't care. Let's just start there for a start. When someone comes to your website, the headline, the first thing they see, the image, they need to relate to it.
Well, there's a spine and a person rubbing a back.
So you as an osteopath relate to that,
but not your
customer. This is going back to what I said earlier about getting into the mind of the customer. So what they're interested, at the point they come to your website, that they will have, if they're coming to you, they'll have an issue or a problem, and talk to them in their language. It's not about you, and certainly your branding, it matters, it's important, but it would never be the biggest thing on the page, or it shouldn't ever be the biggest thing on the page like this, because it's not about you, it's about your customers.
But this isn't even about me, is it? This is welcome to my website.
Yeah, it says it all, doesn't it?
You know, it's not what people come to your website for, to learn about your website, but there is a cheery few images on it. You know, there's a balloon to make you feel better.
There's some stones
to make you feel balanced.
There's some clip art from 1987 on here, I can see that, yeah.
Let's forget this one. If you click on the spine,
right,
the thing you had to click on the real website.
Why would you, but yes.
If you click on the spine, you go to the next one, which says, welcome to our webpage.
Okay.
And it's got some
inspired
text. Now, Nigel won't be aware of the foundation of osteopathy. Osteopathy was founded by Andrew Taylor Still, and many osteopaths are very, very proud of that, quite rightly. And we make a big song and dance about how it was founded by Andrew Taylor Still.
Okay.
Do you think patients care?
No.
No.
I love this diseases as well.
Well, you see, that's an osteopathic expression.
Is it?
People, yeah. We're taught, well, the opposite of ease is dis-ease, and so it's actually written that way in some texts.
Well, I think you're asking too much of your potential customers. So, yeah.
But we've got down the side, we've got some headlines, you know.
Okay, what we treat, contact us. Okay, so this is the classic thing here. I mean, this is... this sets out, to some extent, I mean, I can see now what you've done here. You're kind of doing this to kind of make a point here.
This is based on a genuine website. It really is.
Okay, so, but there's nothing in here that is even trying to tell me why I should go to this osteopath as opposed to any of the others that I've got the choice of. You know, I'm delighted that he knows his history. And that he doesn't even, what's interesting here, osteopaths must register with the General Osteopathic Council and have full medical indemnity insurance. That's lovely. He doesn't actually join the dots there and assume that he is, therefore. But you've got to get at this from your customer's perspective. And why should, this is a good question, why should your hard-working patient spend his or her hard-earned cash with you? Why should they come to your practice or your clinic as opposed to any of the others? And you better have a good answer to that. And it cannot be because osteopathy was founded by Andrew Taylor Still, or you spell disease in a strange way, or that you're registered with the Osteopathic Council, because so is everybody else. So what is it about your clinic that makes the difference?
Let's assume that our very, very eager customer has clicked on what we treat.
Okay.
Which takes us to the third page.
Yeah.
This is the only three pages I've done. So we do treat a wide range of musculoskeletal complaints.
Okay.
Yeah, and some of them are listed below.
That's a properly good word, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a properly good word.
I don't think I've ever used that in copy like that. Okay. Musculoskeletal, okay. And place the mouse over the complaint for more information.
Right, and I'll use a range of techniques to treat your problem, including craniosacral, high-velocity thrusts, cracks, and soft tissue manipulation.
Okay.
And I'll take a full case history, and I may ask you to undress your underwear in order to assess your movements.
Okay, yeah.
That's all right, isn't it? I'm telling you what to expect.
Well, you're feeding me this, aren't you? I mean, this is not the way to build a relationship with someone. It's not the way, because this is all about you again. When we're writing any marketing copy, the number of I's or we's should be a third of the number of you or yours. So three times as many, because it forces you to change how you write your copy. Because if I'm wanting to a page around this, I can see how a page around what you treat might be helpful, although, but I would come at it from the perspective of the patient, not from what you're going to do. The bit about the, case history and undressing to your underwear. There's no upside to that.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no upside to that at all. Why would you put that on? All that can possibly do is put people off or attract the wrong person potentially. So you wouldn't put that there. But they don't care about the names of the stuff that you're doing, the craniosacral high velocity thrusts or whatever. They're not interested in that at all. What they're interested in is, are you going to solve my problem? And one of the things that's missing from here, from these three pages, which I think is really, really important for any practice, is a really rich collection of testimonials and case studies from real people.
Yeah.
And you're in a market where people, they will be so grateful to you. Because, I've got friends who, go to their osteopath and their osteopath changes their life. Their weekend is so much better, and they'll give you such wonderful...
Yeah, and they don't mind being asked,
no,
do they?
No, they're not at all. But the key thing is you have got to ask them. Because, what we do for a lot of our... If we want some testimonials from people, we make it as easy as we can for them. And so what we will typically do is we will write them for them. And often the trigger will be because they've said something nice to us. Because so we know how happy they've been. We've heard it somewhere. We'll have a conversation. I say, well, would you mind if I wrote that down? Could I use that in my marketing? They're so happy to that. So then you set the time to write it. And then you show it to them. You email them and say, are you happy with this? So, yeah, absolutely happy with that. Then now you've got a good testimonial. testimonial. Now, what happens on this website here, if you've got on every page, if you've got four or five nice, short, but precise comments with photographs of the people and real names, now this guy knows what he's doing. You know, this guy, you know, I can walk 10 miles on Saturday, my golf handicap's come down, I can now play with my grandkids, you know, I was on the trampoline with the children. Now, these, in the language that matters to the, because that's the problem that they've got, that starts to become much more useful.
This was in response to a question, somebody asking, is it worth spending a lot of money on a website? So, no, this wasn't, I was going to do this anyway, but the reason I went into it is because I wanted to know, should they spend a lot of money? They've been quoted between hundreds and thousands of pounds for a website. Does it really make that difference? You need something that's nice, don't you?
Yes, you do. And there is, I just love this, problems I treat babies. I love that. That's brilliant. In this day and age now, if you're serious about building your practice, you need an effective website. Yeah. Websites have moved on huge. I mean, this site that you show me here, you know, if this is representative, this was a site that was created, you know, 10, 12, 15 years ago, I suspect. Yeah. And it hasn't moved on, and the world has moved on. And, you know, you sort of look at the sites, the high traffic places that people go to, and that's the standard that they're kind of used to. So you do need it to be modern and contemporary. It will help you hugely.
But I don't
doesn't have to cost thousands
exactly,
of pounds.
Exactly, yeah. You can still produce a nice-looking website.
Yes, you can.
Now, only a couple of days ago, we had a patient who, in our sort of conversation during treatment, admitted that they came to us because they liked our website. Other people's websites didn't look as effective, didn't look as clean. Yeah. So, you know, people do, if they've never been to you before, they will compare you with other people, won't they?
Completely.
And you know, that little thing is going to set you apart. But you can do that through WordPress relatively cheaply a little bit of advice.
And you've got video on your website, haven't you?
Yeah. Video's
and
so good, isn't
video
it?
Is a big thing now. And it allows you, in terms of building relationships, the video is a really valuable way. And you've seen that, like, tonight. Because, like, love it or hate it, but one way that you know Stephen before, but you know... Yeah. More about me and the type of person I am now because you've watched me in real life on video. Yeah. And that's what your patients need when they come and see you. So if I've got a website, there is a 90-second video on that website which has got you in it. It might have some patients talk or, you know, voicing some of the testimony, but you're showing the clinic, you're showing the people, you're on there, because they start to build a relationship. Yes. And that's a really smart thing to have. So a website without video, I would suggest, is a no-no.
Nigel, we're out of time.
Are we really?
We're out of time.
Goodness,
it is. We've been on for an hour and a half. Conversation, as always with you, has flowed. We're out of time. You thinking back, you'll remember, this is Nigel at the end of the day when he's not at his best. In the morning,
I'm going to bed now. It's late
morning,
for me.
In the morning, he's full of beans. Just imagine what that must be like for him, for his staff, and for everyone around him. Nigel, it's been great, as always.
It's been helpful.
It's been very, very helpful. I will summarise all that for the notes that go up on the website in due course. It'll take a few days, as always. It's been a great evening. I hope you've enjoyed it, and we'll see you again soon.